Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. For those of you who've been listening to my show for a while and have gone to my website, read my articles, you probably have figured out how much this world is changing. It is going to be completely different 100 years from now. I know we're completely different than we were 100 years ago, but this is at a whole nother level as far as how much we're going to be changing and how technology is going to change us. Today's guest is Liz Parrish. She is an aging expert and one of the top experts in the world, along with Bill Andrews and Aubrey de Grey. And she's going to talk about what her company, BioViva, is doing and what she's personally doing. She is only human in the world who has done genetic therapy on aging on herself. So she's the only person who has had this treatment. And she's lengthened her telomeres, and she's also reduced fat in her muscles and built muscle mass. She will explain this whole thing to us and what she's doing. But also we will talk about where aging is, where the science of aging is, and what we're looking at as far as being able to cure the disease of aging. In fact, what they're realizing is that almost all diseases are right now are a byproduct of aging. And if you solve aging, you cure most of the diseases that are ailing our society. The diseases that aren't diseases of aging are being solved on their own. And we're getting to a point now where the only diseases that are left are the ones that are from aging. So it's a remarkable subject area, and it's really important, as so many people are dying every day from these. But of course, if we solve aging, now we have all sorts of other issues as far as population and, you know, ethical issues with that. But if you have treatment for people so that they don't die from a disease, or they don't get Alzheimer's, or they don't live the last 30 years of their life suffering, is it not ethical to use that treatment for them? So we have a lot of change. We have a lot of social questions to ask and a lot of development that we're going to be going through over the next few, maybe the next 100 years as we start to grapple with these questions. You know, AI is starting to really take off. How is that going to affect us, as most jobs are going to be done better by a computer? Of course, we still need to overlook these things, but does it free our time up to be creative? And we can be what we were meant to be? Or does it scare you and now we have all these people without jobs? Well, we need to be better as people. If we live longer, we can have a lot more wisdom and we could do some better things. It depends on how you have an outlook on the world. It can be really scary and it can be exhilarating and amazing at the same time. Then you look at SpaceX and some of the other exploration companies who are really working hard to become a fleet, an airliner, if you will, for going between planets. If we live a lot longer, we're going to have to reach out and have colonies elsewhere. So that's another thing that's going to be changing over the next 100 years. Where are we going to expand to? Of course, we can't destroy ourselves in the process. We got to make sure we still make it. Nuclear weapons are a very serious threat. We have things going on in Syria and around the world, you know, with Russia. Hopefully they have calmer heads than we seem to have right now, and that we are smart and we don't destroy ourselves. You know, those are the questions as we go. We have big, big questions and things we're grappling with in the world today and over the next 100 years. Will society change and in productive ways to meet the technology that we have? Our social institutions are not there. They're not there now. So we have a lot of work to do. But this interview is absolutely amazing. I really enjoyed having Liz Parrish and talking to her. I hope you will too. She's a very neat person. But before I get into that interview, I want to remind you that I have a book called The Wrong Side of History. It's about the Syrian war and what we're doing there. It's another example of how we need to get serious about the things that we're doing in the world and how incredibly dumb this is. Not to mince words, we're just being incredibly dumb as a country. And the good people need to rise up and just make sure that people that are skewed in their thinking, maybe greed is motivating them. We don't have, with the technology we have and with the weapons we have no room for greed taking over. We need to be wiser and smarter than this. So this book, Wrong Side of History, is explaining what's really going on in Syria. Really, really recommend that you read it, you share it with your friends. If you cannot afford it, I will send it to you for free. No questions, no worries. I will not judge you. Just please, I'd rather have everybody just read it. You can get it on my website at sarahwestall.com, or you can get it at Amazon, and it's in both ebook form and paperback form, whatever you like best. But please try to get a hold of that and read it. The information in there is really important. So let's not waste much more time, and let's get into my interview with Liz Parrish. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. I'm really glad that you decided to join us, because I have been interviewing, as you know, Bill Andrews and Abu Gray on aging issues. And everybody, I had maybe 20 people in comments say, I need to interview you. So here we go.
Fantastic. Yeah. So Bill Andrews and Aubrey de Grey are both scientific advisors for my company. So of course, that's a shoe-in for us.
Yeah. Well, good. Okay. Well, let's get started, because I want to get right into the meat of all this interesting stuff. What does your company do?
Well, we are a clinical company building an arsenal of treatments against complex disease. We consider ourselves a longevity company, helping people live longer and healthier. And we are pretty focused on biological aging. So this is one of the first set of processes that we would like to treat, reverse, and help people live healthier, happier, longer lives.
Well, that sounds good. So is that your ultimate goal for your company then?
Well, yeah, the ultimate goal for the company is giving humans access to new therapeutics, therapeutics that have more power than old therapeutics, and yeah, helping them live a longer, healthier life. Increasing health span. This is good business, not just increasing lifespan. We don't want people to live older longer. We want people to live healthier longer.
And feel good while you're in your 80s and things.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully erase the connotation of that we have around age now, you know, creating bodies that are capable well into their later years.
So do you have clients and patients now, or do you do mostly research?
We're actually a clinical company, and we're about to embark on opening clinics in different places of the world where we can get consensual access to gene therapy for patients. We're also looking at places where we can do clinical trials, making sure that these drugs are safe for patients over a cohort of several persons. So We do research, but the first thing that we're working on is patient access. And this is a really important thing. Remember that over 110,000 people will die today of the diseases of aging. And these people don't have access to new medicine. And so we're trying to create that access.
And when you say access, is it because it's illegal in this country?
You could go so far to say, is it illegal? I would say it's unregulated, and so it can't be used.
Okay. So you have to go through the regulation process. Now, is that something that you think will happen, or, I mean, eventually it will, but I mean, is it something that'll happen in a reasonable amount of time, or do you really need to go to other countries to get this established?
In order to really go to the front of the line, you need to go to places where safety can be used as enough data to bring drugs into patients, and or patients can use drugs under consent. You know, it's considered experimental medicine under high level of consent. So that means that there's a lot of paperwork to sign. But patients have no other option. So in the U.S., the process is over 15 years, and it's over $1 billion. And so no small biotech company can actually achieve that. What we see is small biotechs, you know, trying to get to phase one and getting, you know, acquired by bigger companies. And I just think that what we need to do is we need to create a platform where small companies can come to us and actually launch their drugs that have a safety platform, that have a background in research that show that they're safe and effective in animals and in human tissue, at least, hopefully in preclinical trials in humans, and give people access to these drugs. So we're taking a lot of drugs that have gone through the FDA, but we're actually dying taking them. Not any of these drugs are significantly prolonging life at this point. You know, immunizations and antibiotics have extended our life. And now we're basically holding steadfast for these new technologies. And these are the technologies that will actually start to bust health span again.
Well, my question for you then is, because there's a lot of pharmaceuticals that get fast-tracked. Why is it that there's fast-tracked pharmaceuticals, but yet you know, for a smaller company, it takes 15 years and $1 billion?
Well, actually, for most drugs, it actually does. And most drugs get sunk long before they make it all the way through the phase three trials. Fast tracking is generally done for orphan diseases. And so it's diseases that affect a small population. And we see this with some of the gene therapies. So when there's a monogenic disease, meaning that there's one gene mutation, and the cure is actually just replacing or actually putting the healthy copy of the gene into the cell, we see these treatments often fast-tracked for patients. But this is kind of a risk-averse model. So number one, biological aging isn't considered a disease. So what we're doing is we're overlooking what causes the diseases that we die of. And the mechanisms at this process in this process are what are driving, you know, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, COPD, and diabetes type 2 and various other diseases. And so until we actually address that as a disease, it is hard to treat these complex diseases. Often, again, we see fast tracking on either gene therapies for orphan diseases that affect very few people and they're just monogenic disease, which we're very happy that this happens because we're seeing actually 8 cures through the pipeline for monogenic disease in gene therapy right now. So that's fantastic. But, you know, fast tracking drugs that may not extend your life time, your health, probably is a bit of a waste of time at this point.
So do you foresee yourself having to go to other countries or do you think you can get it done here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're looking at other countries. So we're looking, again, at countries where patients can come and by consent take these therapies, and countries that have a safety profile on drugs that then can be used by consent. So we can run trials, prove that the drug is safe, and then open it to a market. And this is actually a better way to do drugs. So medical tourism is a big market, mm-hmm. and the key to successful medical tourism is to have a team that's not just medical doctors, but is also researchers. And that's what BioViva is. We are a consortium of medical doctors and researchers. And what they do is they work together to actually create the profile on what's happening with the patient to actually get good clinical data as to what therapies work and what therapies don't work, and if they work, what parts of the body they work in, and where we need to clean up the damage in other areas.
So before we get more into that, I want to ask you a little bit more about, you know, working in other countries. I've done shows on medical tourism and so forth, but now do you expect yourself to be working in other countries and then once you get it to a certain point, come back to the U.S. for certain things, or does the U.S. still have a high hurdle, even if you can prove it works really great in other countries?
Actually, I think that it's a great idea to come back to the US market. And I think that the US market will actually change. I think that the FDA will have to make some changes in order to expedite the use of these more promising drugs. So remember, we can look at safety and efficacy through the FDA, and it's great. We should be using safe and effective drugs. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But it doesn't mean that we pass safe drugs through the FDA. People are dying from some of the drugs that they're taking. There are overdoses. There are adverse drug effects every year in the 100,000. We have to sort of get away from the idea that everything is safe just because it's come through the US system. Certainly, our company doesn't want to embark on anything that is unsafe. But right now, we're dying of these diseases and we need access to new medicine. So, this gives us a way to speed up access to patients.
Well, what do you think of like what Bill Anders is doing, where he's doing the trial on the lemurs, where he thinks he has a solution for bringing the telomeres, lengthening them 100%, and he's doing that Madagascar trial. Very expensive, so it's not a reasonable solution for the average person, and he's going to use the money from this to find a reasonable solution. But he has over 1,500 people in the East that are going to go through this process. If it is really successful and it does what they're hoping it does, people all over the world are going to be clamoring for it, and that's the demand that the FDA is going to feel. I mean,
Well, yeah, exactly. So we're using a very similar therapy. It's the gene therapy to lengthen telomeres. And of course, Bill Andrews is our scientific advisor. And this is the promise of medicine today. I actually think that we can bring the cost down in this gene therapy. It's going to take several years, but I think we can bring it down to where it is manageable and it will be the treatment against biological aging of that hallmark of aging, which is telomere attrition.
So that's how you differ from Bill Andrews' work. He's working with the enzymes, and you're working with gene therapy. Is that the difference?
Yeah, that's right. And he's actually looking at doing some work with the gene therapy as well. I do not know about his work in Madagascar with the lemurs. I love lemurs. I'd like them to live a long time. And I mean, we are definitely in line with Bill's thinking with the gene therapy and the enzyme itself. And so he definitely advises the company as well in those areas.
What I'm so impressed by with everyone I've seen in the aging, you and Bill, is that you don't care necessarily where the answers are coming from, as long as the answers are coming and we're all working together to find that solution. Bill doesn't say it came here and I won't take anything in. He's just looking for a solution. And so I love that about how you guys are working.
Yeah, so we're a two clinic platform. So if it works, we'll use it. If it doesn't work, we won't use it. When Bill has a small molecule and that's safer than the gene therapy, absolutely that would be the thing to use, and we would bring that to clinic and our patients would have access to that. It's all about patient access to new medicine. So we really can't get this job done without human data. The telomerase gene therapy has sat in research for over 10 years. We reversed aging in mice a couple of times, and we've extended healthy lifespans with the same gene therapy in older mice. And so, it's kind of to the point of, what are we waiting for? We need to know that these drugs are safe. Definitely, life isn't safe. You're guaranteed to die. So let's get some of the sickest patients in first and see if we can help them and move these treatments back to a curative immunization type effect against biological aging.
Yeah, but gene therapy in this country is illegal, so that thus the other countries and.
Really illegal. There's actually thousands of people going through gene therapy in the United States. right now. So for monogenic disease, the industry is absolutely booming. If you look at clinical trials right now, you'll see thousands of people taking part in gene therapies. So, you know, I'm not the only person walking around that's taken a gene therapy. Many children with monogenic diseases and adults have partaken in these type of therapies. So they are being regulated. They're slowly getting through. Actually, in the EU, the European Union, two gene therapies have been passed for human use, one for lipoprotein lipase deficiency and another for SCID, severe combined immune deficiency, and that's the boy in the bubble disease. And these are one treatment to a cure. So, you know, people need to really look at the power of these therapies. We're looking at one treatment to a cure for these monogenic, again, one gene mutations. Right now, we're looking now to move them into complex disease, things like biological aging.
I love your view, a very healthy view of how medical tourism is going on and how we can work with the United States. You're just, let's just get it done view. I love that. So your answers are great.
For someone today, for 110,000 people today, it's too late.
Yes,
so
I know.
That's almost 40 million people a year. You know, if this was a plague, if this was an influenza, we would be in absolute panic mode. So, you know, this is something to take very seriously. To each one of those people, it was their life. It was their biggest asset, their biggest value, and it's gone. So there is, I don't believe in moving too fast. This is how we will vet the technology. This is how we will ensure that it's safe. And this is how we will actually embark on getting it to the world. Everything else is just talk.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, can you explain how yours works? And in my notes, I say, please do it at a kindergarten level. I suppose it doesn't have to be that low, but you know,
okay.
I mean,
so if we're talking about, so I took, are you talking about the two therapies that I took?
Yeah. I mean, like what you're doing. Yeah. You're experimenting on yourself, which is amazing. I love that. I'd be doing that too. I just can't, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. Explain that and what you're doing and how it's working.
Yeah. So our company itself, BioVivo, will launch several different therapeutics, but we launched the company with me taking two therapeutics, two of the most promising therapeutics right now in combating biological aging. So the first therapy was the gene therapy to lengthen telomeres. And so your genes are compacted into your chromosomes, and your chromosomes sit in the nucleus of your cell. And at the ends of your chromosomes are the caps, and those are the telomeres. So what happens is your cells divide, the telomeres get shorter and shorter, okay, with each cellular division. And we know that this is directly correlated with all of the diseases of aging. Now, the caps of people's telomeres shorten at different rates. If you look at children with progeria, which is accelerated aging disease, these kids are born old. They die young, and they die of the diseases of aging at a very young age, and they look very old, maybe even in their teen years. They have short telomeres. The average rate of telomere attrition is different for each person, and the more stressful your life is, definitely shortens the caps even faster. You can kind of think of it as the rubber on the bottom of your shoe. You're walking around, and it's slowly wearing down. Telomerase is turned on in a couple of cell types. One is stem cells, and the other one is your germline, ensuring that you don't have old children when they're born. So if you think about it that way, we have it turned on in some of our cells, but not all of our cells. What we'd like to do is turn it on in all of the cells, lengthen the ends of the caps of the telomeres, and then this has a really good effect on the cell. So some of the effects on the cell is it actually creates genomic stability. When we have genomic instability, we know that leads to things like cancer. It also helps the mitochondria come back to a healthy production again. It actually reestablishes the mitochondria. It creates more cell division that your cells can do. Therefore, you can live longer and keep those cells from going senescent. So when cells go senescent, they stop dividing and they start sending off inflammatory markers. And you know, you can actually picture senescent cells of the skin. When people get really old, the skin gets shiny and thin, and those are all non-dividing cells. So we want to kind of combat against these hallmarks of aging, and this is how telomerase induction does that. So the gene goes into the cell, it codes for telomerase, and that lengthens the caps of the telomeres again. So that was one of the therapies. The other therapy was a myostatin inhibitor. And what myostatin inhibitors do is they pump you up. So you'll see increased muscle mass and decreased intramuscular fat. And what's great about that is that increases insulin sensitivity. So that can protect against things like diabetes type 2. And then it also has just this short-term effect that actually is long-term for your body that is more important, which is strength and muscle mass. And for an aging population, aging people suffer from something called sarcopenia, which is muscle wasting. We want to increase the muscle mass so they don't do things like fall down and break their hips, so that they're able to live in homes with stairs, so they're able to carry their groceries, and maybe even get back to laborious work if that's what they want to do, go out and build their deck and things like that. So it really, these type of drugs will create a body that has a homeostasis for a longer period of time. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking to mitigate the diseases of aging, but right now we're starting with the best arsenal that we can. And these two therapies work synergistically together to create stem cell production, but without stem cell depletion. So that's why I hope that was at a level that everyone could understand. And of course, you know, you can always come to the website or ask more questions.
Really great. Now, with telomeres growing, would that solve some of the muscle strength problems as well? Because those cells can now, I mean, does that almost solve, it could solve almost everything, couldn't it? If we could get all of our cells in our body to just reproduce and act like young cells?
Well, the telomerase induction is the most promising gene therapy for biological aging. We don't know if it will hit every hallmark of aging. It would be fantastic if we had the silver bullet and that it would do that. But we're not sure about that yet. And so we're still looking at combinatorial therapies. I believe that ultimately to cure biological aging, it will be combinatorial therapies. But of course, we would be absolutely thrilled if telomerase induction knocked every one of those out of the field. Now, if you even created a healthy, youthful body, but you wanted more muscle mass, then you would definitely want to do a myostatin inhibitor. There's probably several of the gene therapies that we may consider physical enhancements right now that we'll consider the part of average life in the near future. We'll just want to be more than we were before.
Well, Aubrey de Grey has a map of the seven deadly areas and their fixes, which I'm going to put this up on screen. Okay, so first, do you agree with this? I think this gets past the fact that telomerase and telomeres are the only fix. And can you tell me what areas you're focusing on? Because like a mouse, for example, Bill Andrews was telling me that the mice have high levels of, antioxidant or,
antioxidants.
No, they die of having high levels of not antioxidants, but oxidized, right? Is that wrong?
The ROS. Different animals die of different things, and mice actually have long telomeres to begin with.
That's what I mean. They don't die of cell; they die of other issues. So animals can die of other things that regardless of telomeres. So that's us too.
Yeah. Yeah, we all have different weaknesses. And so in order to do the mouse studies with telomerase, they had to do a mouse knockout. They actually had to do a mouse that, if you want to think about it, after about eight generations, it mimicked progeric children. And so then when we put telomerase back in, of course, the animal is healthier. When you knock something out and then you put it back in, the animal's going to be healthier. But that wasn't the point. These mice were biologically old from having short telomeres. And then when you put the telomerase back in, they became young. So we have a twofold thing. One thing, of course, something's going to be healthier when you put something back into its body that it needs. But number two, what you wouldn't expect to see necessarily is the aging reverse in the animal. And that's what we did see. So that was what was fantastic about that. But yeah, different animals die of different things. We have different weak points. So what humans die from is different than what mice die from. And we always say that mice are not men, and that's why we need to work in humans. We need to pioneer new medicine through human bodies pioneering that medicine. So with Aubrey, yeah, absolutely. So we actually look at 10 hallmarks of aging. So he's got his 7, but we look at 10.
Can I get a graph of your 10?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Excellent.
Yeah. So we do believe that there's different mechanisms of biological aging. I think that telomerase actually hits several of the hallmarks, several of the processes that are driving the things that we die from. But it may not hit all of them. And that's why we're a clinic application. That's why we're trying to bring other companies' platforms into our platform to launch them into human bodies to see if we can target everything. Now, once we've treated, let's say, 100 bodies with telomerase, we will know what that enzyme actually targets, what it can reverse, and what it cannot reverse. And we will work in tangent, in parallel during that time to look at other therapies and what they target in reverse. So I do believe that Aubrey is right about all of these different areas of biological aging. I do believe that one treatment can hit several of those. Probably what I don't agree with is that telomerase in telomeres are bad. And that's the only place that we diverge. But he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, because I would think that if you don't deal with the telomeres, you're done. Because according to Bill Anders, what he was saying, right? I mean, you...
Well, yeah, it, outside of something very, very, very complicated... That would absolutely be true. I mean, in order to do away with the telomere, that creates a load of genomic instability. And, outside of changing humans drastically and creating like round chromosomes or something along this lines, I'm not sure how that works. So we agree with everything, I think, except for that one area.
Yeah, well, excellent. Because I love the way you're presenting this, because once you do the telomeres and you get that out there, then you can see, okay, well, what isn't it dealing with? Well, like oxidative stress, that's not going to deal with that, right? It's not going to deal with...
Well, actually, it does. When you lengthen telomeres, there's a great diagram I can have my team send you. When
excellent.
You lengthen telomeres, it actually keeps the... mitochondria from having the bombardment of oxidative stress, which destroys the mitochondria. So the mitochondria actually reestablish their health. So we do have an indication that it can help with many of these things. A young cell cleans up its damage, an old cell does not. So there are potential big benefits here. Now, will it be everything? No, probably not. We will have to address these other issues as well.
See what falls out. Because mice, that's where mice are different than humans. And that's why you got to test on humans, because humans have a different, we just are different.
Well, remember that older mice were actually treated with telomerase and they lived longer, healthier as well. And that could have helped with the oxidative stress. We don't know. Now, was it the cure? Did it create a mouse that lived for 1,000 years? No, it wasn't. So there are many different mechanisms of aging that we need to look at. And Aubrey's work hopefully will translate to BioViva clinics or to the world. Whatever he's doing, we want that to translate into medicine as well. Absolutely brilliant work that Sense does, and obviously Bill's work is. I took the treatment that did what Bill was saying, because I really think that it's the most promising therapy in the short term.
Well, I think what he has going on with his, his telomere trial in Madagascar, it's not going to work for the average person because it's $2 million a person or per treatment. It's so expensive. But what's so promising about what you're doing is maybe you have that lower cost solution. I mean, so together you're going to just, you're changing the world. I mean, this is one of the biggest, this is, if not the biggest thing in all of medicine.
Yeah, so gene therapy is a nascent technology, so you have to put everything into perspective. It's like building the supercomputer, which costs millions and millions of dollars. What we want to do is make it so that everyone has an iPhone or a smartphone, you may want to say. And that technology is stronger than the first supercomputer. So right now, gene therapy is really expensive, but in the next, 8 to 10 years, it won't be. We will drive the price down on it. Our company is about democratizing healthcare and actually getting it to the whole world. The whole world benefits from healthy people. Each one of the diseases of aging is coming up on being a trillion-dollar problem globally on its own. So that's a big hit to the healthcare system. And actually, we industrialized off of lifespan. So as people live longer, this is when we see industrialized booms in economies and things that we do on a massive scale as countries. And so the idea that people will live longer and work more productively in the workforce and keep this knowledge base, there's a cost to training people. And there's a point where they actually become productive workers. And we will have, a massive workforce that is highly educated in multiple realms. And this will drive industry and the health and the wealth of countries. And this is one of the key factors to creating the world that we want to live in. People who take care of the environment and actually realize that we all have to get along if we want to live in a happy world.
Well, and so much of all of our problems, medical problems, are th is this, right? I mean, they claim that diabetes is a disease. I mean, it is a disease, and Alzheimer's and all these things, but those are diseases of aging. So if we solve the aging issue, we could be solving most medical issues.
Yeah, they're simply the symptoms of biological aging, and that's why we see these diseases rise at about the age of 45. All of these catastrophic diseases that most people now die of, and actually by 2050, I believe the whole world steps up to predominantly dying of the diseases of aging. This is a really, really big deal, and what we thought were diseases are merely symptoms of the underlying causes of biological aging, the processes that break down over time, that our cells don't do as well as we age.
So, with your own stuff that you did on yourself, what did you notice? How did you change? I mean, it's just great. I want to do it.
One thing is my muscle mass increased and my insulin sensitivity increased as well. So, what we looked at was the MRIs before and after, and we saw the muscle increase, the intramuscular fat decrease, we saw the blood glucose levels change. I had an increase in insulin sensitivity, so they increased by 25%. We saw triglyceride levels go down by 50%, which means better heart health. We saw C-reactive proteins go down sixfold. So at my age, when I took the treatment, I was 44, so I already had pretty decent C-reactive protein levels. C-reactive proteins would, if they're high, that would be indicative to inflammation in your body, and it would show that maybe you were at risk for cancer and various other things. Mine went down sixfold.
What?
In my average life, I just feel more capable. I have more energy. I'm less likely to ask someone to do something for me. And I started to notice that after time, about 6 months after the therapy, I realized that I was climbing back on top of counters to get on top of cupboards, to get things down, and carrying more bags of groceries and things like that. I mean, I feel fantastic.
So, how old are you now?
I'm 46.
You're same age as me. Ooh. So you look very young. Now, did your skin get better too?
I think that it probably did a little bit. We really need to bump up the therapy now. So remember, I took a safety dose, and it was a large dose of gene therapy. But in order to target every cell of the body, we really have to turn things up in a safe way. And so, we estimate that probably we need about 3 to 6 times the amount that I took to have a better overview of what will actually happen in the human body. And then we'll know if we need to retreat over time. The cells that we target should be good for a very long time. You know, they may be good for upwards of 15 years, but this will be an interesting area of finding out, you know, what actual dose we need to take. And this is part of the need for human studies. So even if we've reversed aging in mice twice, we've extended older mice lifespans in health, we need to start working in humans, and we need to see what sort of dosing that we need to create a human that is just healthier and better across the board. So this is the point that we're at right now. It's called titration. How much do you need? And then how long will that last?
So could you set up a trial then?
Yeah, we're trying to do that. We're starting with the myostatin inhibitors, but we are trying to set up trials for telomerase induction as well in other places in the world, and we'll let you know when we land one.
Well, maybe you could do like what Bill was doing with the mouse lemurs, you know, and with the primates, and just do a full-blown trial. That would be incredible.
The thing is that animal studies are quite expensive. They're okay. Considered rather unethical. And right now, again, we have 110,000 people of dying of biological aging every day. So we would like human access, because even if we do a primate study, people may still not believe that the therapy will work.
Well, I like the fact that if there's 110,000, they're going to die anyways. That what do they have to lose? You know, it's the worst it could do is it just might work too well, and is, you know, with the it might create some kind of cancer or something, you don't know, but as far as you can tell, everything shows that it's just going to make everybody healthier, so why not just try it? It's like
Well, you know, the studies in telomerase have sort of split into two directions. There's one that they look at curbing telomerase if it is has been turned on in cancer. And so cancer actually has 10 different mechanisms to it. And a grow and go gene like telomerase actually does help things like cancer grow. But in longevity studies, we don't see the two crossing over. In longevity studies, we see telomerase creating healthy cells that are indicative of essentially the best preventative measure against cancer.
Excellent.
When your body is young and healthy, it fights against cancer. So every day we get cancerous cells. A lot of people don't know that. And our immune system combats those cells back. But what happens is we get older and older, you know, you can see, you know, after the age of 75, your risk of cancer goes up 80% because your cells are old, your immune system is worn down, and it no longer catches those cancerous cells. A way to boost up the immune system is telomerase induction.
Excellent. And that's what Bill Anders is saying too. He's just adamant. So he gets a little frustrated when people say, and I can tell that it frustrates you a little bit too, when they say it causes cancer, because it actually is the opposite.
Yeah, I think that it will actually be the prevention against cancer. Now, cancer is something that we'll always have to check over time. I think that we can cure many of the diseases of aging or the symptoms of biological aging, however you want to think of them. But cancer is something that we'll always have to check because of things like radiation. There's a lot of damage that happens to our cells over time just by environmental stress. But keeping long telomeres actually helps with genomic stability and can help clean up those cells and or help those cells go through apoptosis, which means cell death. They signal something's wrong. The cell's healthy enough to say something's wrong, go through cell death, whereas with senescent cells, not in all cases, but in some cases, the cell just says stop dividing and then sits there. And in that sense, senescence is kind of a protection against cancer, but we'd like to throw some of it out. We'd like to keep the healthy senescent cells that help the body repair itself, but throw out the ones that are just sitting stagnant and throwing off inflammation markers to the body. And so telomerase induction may be one way to do that. It will help the cell be healthy enough to realize that it has damage, and it should just essentially suicide. And that's what cells do. They actually are helping us all the time, making decisions. This is a process that we'd like to ensure continues healthy.
Well, you would think, hopefully there's a leader of some country listening to this podcast, listening to the radio show on satellite, and we need a country to step up and say, yes, I will work with Liz and you can work with our elderly. They're going to die anyways, which sounds terrible, but it's true. And let's do a trial.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't announce them right now, but we are working with countries that are interested in that. There are ministries of health that will allow certain technologies in, and there are countries who want to innovate. And in the future, that will be the difference between a country's wealth is the innovative countries and the non-innovative countries. And these countries want health for their people. They want health democratized, and they want the income that is driven from these therapies that are driving ultimate health rather than just placebo effects and you know, traditional drugs that really don't offer much over time anymore.
Let's talk about the ethics. Okay.
Okay.
If we live quite a bit older, and what are you thinking we could live to? You know, 150, 1,000?
Well, I think that right now, you know, humans are long-lived species, and that's one of the reasons that we don't do a lot of work in humans on longevity. We mostly do it on short lifespan animals. So remember, we've increased the lifespan of worms by 11 times. We've increased the lifespan of mice by 5 times and flies by 6 times, and this is all through gene modulation. We need to work in humans. Initially, what we'll need to do is prove that we can create a healthy body, a body that through the biomarkers of biological aging that are still being established, and through biomarkers that we already have, we show that the body is healthier. We show that it is at a state of a more youthful, healthy body, and therefore we can start to predict how long that body might live. But you know, this will only get us so far. So breaking the 125-year age, this will probably be done within our lifetime for sure. Creating the homeostasis that makes a body persist, I hope will happen in our lifetime. And that's why our company's here, to get to work as fast as possible to help people now. If we're successful, if we're diligent, if we allow these technologies, if we demand these technologies, remember, there's a lot of things that everyone can do. You don't just have to be able to afford $1 million gene therapy today. You can demand access to those therapies. And we see that with right to try and different laws that are coming through different countries. But if we're able to create a homeostasis in a body, there really isn't a limit. Like a lot of people will say, well, a body might live to be 1,000 years old, but what thing in the body is going to go wrong suddenly at 1,000 years? So right now we're a health company. So what we're just trying to do is drive health. We don't get too much into the longevity issue, but I mean, if you really want to be philosophical, once we take the brakes off of lifespan significantly, and not just, you know, eking systems along and wearing them out over time, that's not what it's about. It's not about living old longer. It's about living healthy and youthful and increasing health span. So we'll do that as much as we can. But once we break the barrier of, let's say, 150 years, and we create a homeostasis again, what would limit? If you're healthy, what do you die of?
Yeah, so it's arbitrary to say 1,000 years, you're just going to suddenly die. It doesn't make sense. If you can live to 1,000, you can live forever. Right?
I never understand that. So suddenly you're living to 1,000, but then you just drop dead. Well, maybe by a natural disaster, and certainly infectious disease will always plague us. It mutates quite quickly. Gene therapy does show some effects against infectious disease. We can use gene therapies that create antibodies that protect you from things like Ebola, believe it or not, in other diseases. And so gene therapy may be the cure for infectious disease in the long run, but infectious disease is quite wicked in its mutations, and so we'll always be somewhat plagued with it, as we will be with some cancers, I believe, as well.
Okay, so let's talk about the ethics. We've established the fact that we with telomeres therapy, telomerase therapy, we should be able to get past that 125 marker, because that's what's knocking us out. I mean, it's just a hard limit, right? Okay.
Yeah, as long as telomere elongation also affects glycation and some of the other hallmarks of aging that we're looking at, absolutely. But think hard on the fact that we will really be looking at combinatorial therapies.
Exactly.
And so with the correct combinatorial therapy, yeah, absolutely. I think that we can break that 125 year span.
Okay, now let's look at the ethics of that, because now suddenly we're going to have a lot of people. But there's ethics of not doing something as well, letting people die.
Yeah.
If you have the therapies, is it seems unethical not to use it.
Yeah.
But, you know, cause, and also people suffering for the last 25 years of their life. It's unethical to force that if we have something for them as well. But the ethics of also having, you know, too many people on the planet or whatever. I mean, what do you see with that? Is the solution getting outside of the planet, you know, setting up colonies elsewhere?
Well, I think that what we see is that humans are self-regulating, and yeah, we will go into the expanse of space, and gene therapy has great applications there, and even maybe in the short term for people who are at NASA and visiting the International Space Station, there are gene therapies that may be applicable to their health right now. As far as the long term, number one, the carrying capacity of the Earth is higher than we used to think, especially with our new modified food that actually helps feed more people. And we actually should talk about the ethics of that, because we are feeding more people in the world than we have ever fed before. And we have actually, if you look at the statistics, even though the news looks rather grim, less people are dying from war and terrorism than ever before. So we're working towards a healthier, happier community. But most importantly, when lifespan increases, what we see is a decrease in birth rates. And we see this regardless of the culture or where in the world we look. If you look at lifespan increase in birth rates, they're very interesting. Again, lifespan increases, birth rates go down. Countries like Japan are at negative growth. We're becoming even or negative growth in some of the European countries. And the places that we're still having a lot of children are in the developing world and in some of the harshest conditions. And so we believe there's a great group at Oxford University. I can't think of the name of the group right now, but they do stats on the Earth and global populations, and they have incredible information on this, and we use this data. So less people are being born. So right now, as we move into 2020, we'll have more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 5. There are less people being born. So we have a feeling that there will be some sort of stasis in population at some point, or at least just massive slowing to the growth that we already see. You know, this is one of the issues that will drive invention, is the necessity to drive that invention of new processes to feed people and new ways to live in communities and ways to get to space and colonize. But again, infectious disease will continue to plague us. So there will be limiting factors, I think, to growth. And we cannot block the cures to things like Alzheimer's and cancer and heart disease because we fear population. I mean, that would be absolutely unethical. There was a lot of debate and clamoring and taking to the streets with the first use of antibiotics and immunizations, but they radically extended lifespan threefold for the average person. Most people died around the age of 35 to 40 just 150 years ago. You know, 90 some percent of the population didn't live this long. And now we consider living this long normal. So people will say, oh, it's normal to die of the diseases of aging, but it's absolutely not normal for humans to die of the diseases of aging. And so we have to sort of get past this premise. And anyone who's had a grandmother or a grandfather with Alzheimer's, I mean, how could that be humane? So we have to move towards a humane world. And those humane decisions will lead into more humane decisions about how humans should live and how we will limit our growth, or it will be limited naturally. again, because we're a health company, we say, let's just work on the first parts. Let's just prove that we can do this rather than worrying about a future dystopia. The world does not seem to move into dystopia. We actually seem to move into a better world by the decade. We do make good choices. Now, in sci-fi, we don't make good choices. When you go to Hollywood, you see AI going crazy. You see, gene therapies causing all sorts of problems. But we don't see that in the real world. You know,
I think at an individual level, we make some pretty bad choices. You know, like our government has made some pretty bad choices. But if you look at, I mean, you can't deny that. But if you look at over hundreds of years, you know, there's the Swede, I think he's from Sweden, he has the stats. I got to put that up there. I'm going to put it up there where it shows how the aging, how much we've aged has gone up. Our access to food has gone up. Our money has gone up. People are living a better life than they have. And it's amazing.
Sure. Yeah. And we're humans. And so, you know, as we do things politically, we definitely then learn and we jump back to the other side. So we are still humans. We make mistakes. Governments do wacky things. But this is all part of the learning process. I mean, we're not going to suddenly become highly intelligent, creative thinking beings more than we are right now overnight, but we can become those things over time.
Especially if we can live longer, because we don't live that long, right? If we could live to be 300-400 years old, we could be pretty wise. But at this age, it's like, okay, I'm starting to get wise, or starting to kind of know things, but I'm not going to live that much longer, you know?
And there's a lot of data on how people live and how they expand out. I would have to get you a paper to this data. It's very interesting. Some people have actually looked at different age groups, and not only different age groups, but whether someone was critically ill or not. So when people are young, they tend to span out. They meet lots of people. They're open-minded to new ideas. But as we get older, we start to stockpile and go insular into our local community and then finally to our family. And this insularness starts to limit our creative growth. And so if you look at young people who get sick, the same process happens to them. But if they get well, they go back into the old process. And so if you think about an aging population, what sort of probably low level of tolerance they might have for making bad decisions, or the government making bad decisions, and they might work together to make, you know, a better environment, a better, healthier community, and a happier outcome for a more global response. And that's really what we need.
Yeah, we really do. As you know, this has been an incredible interview. I mean, I am just absolutely, this is great. We didn't get into the ethics of, we have like 2 minutes here. We didn't get into the ethics of some of the things that we need to do with more people. One thing that Bill Andrews said is the one thing he realizes is that young people might not have an ability to get into occupations because they'll be barred because they won't have the, it'll be hard for them to get in. People will already be in those positions and almost be locked. And so there'll be some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that there'll be a lot of re-education, though. I don't think that people will stay in the same fields. And we see AI taking over many people's jobs. You know, we see now you can go online. You don't need to, in every case, our company does, but in every case, the average person doesn't need to have an attorney for a will or various things like that. There is more things that are being automated. And, you know, it's quite possible we will eventually move to a system where people have just an average wage across the board, but a very, very good outcome in their life, and they can be creative and educate into new areas. But much of work may actually go away over the next 100 years, and that seems very strange. But even medical doctors in many cases don't need to be visited anymore. There's telemedicine and robots. When we do things with biology, when we create therapies, when we do operations, when we do things like this on the human body, it's better to have humans out of the picture because there's biocontamination that they create in these scenarios. So it would be better to have a computer do an operation on a human body than a human, obviously with some human oversight. But actually, most of the errors will in the future come from humans, not from robotics. And so, you know, the world is changing. And, you know, the idea of re-educating for multiple positions, even for older people, is definitely there. But that wisdom that we'll carry with us for being the older generation in a youthful world will definitely be a benefit to the people who are older now.
And we have to figure that out and how that's going to work. And I think SpaceX and some of those other companies come into it. I interviewed Glenn Shotwell, and their goal is to be the transportation to other planets. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, I think that'll all come together. This is fantastic.
I hope that people visit BioViva before they go, and they get their gene therapy based on the planet that they're going to live on, based on the gravity and the radiation exposure of that planet, or the long distances that they'll take into space. And I look forward to seeing the future.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to have you back at some point as your progress goes. And thank you. I hope you have a great day.
You have a great day, too. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
That's all I have for today. I hope you all have a wonderful day. And don't forget to go to my website or to Amazon and get Wrong Side of History. Again, have a wonderful day.